Thanks for joining us. We are starting a new series today called Behind Enemy Lines. I'm Dr. Fred, and you're listening to Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, and thank you for joining me. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, we're beginning a new series today, and it's called Behind Enemy Lines. And in essence, that's what Christians are. When we become Christians, God does not take us out of this world. He basically leaves us here with his protection, his strength, his guidance, certainly his love, and basically the tools that we need to complete his will. But he leaves us here behind enemy lines. Now, in the book of Daniel, chapter 10, we read the following words, quote, "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief priests, came to help me, for I had been left there with the king of Persia." That's Daniel 10:13. Now, that situation may not seem so odd to people, that one powerful demon, in this case referred to as the prince of the kingdom of Persia, could war against one of the angels from God's camp, keeping him at bay. After all, this is what takes place within the spiritual realm. That's spiritual battle. What is a bit strange, however, is what this same angel tells Daniel after he has finished explaining the meaning of one of the visions that Daniel has had. He says, "But I shall now return to fight against the prince of Persia, so I'm going forth, and behold, the prince of Greece is about to come." Here's my question. Why did this angel from God have to go back to the throne, apparently, the same way he arrived to Daniel? We know that in order for that angel to arrive to Daniel, he spent 21 days fighting against the prince of Persia. Because we are dealing with an angel from the Lord, we automatically know that this was occurring in the spiritual realm. So we can rule out the fact that he was fighting against human beings. The angel from God was obviously and clearly fighting against the powers and principalities in the heavenly realms. And we go to Ephesians 6:12 for a reference to that. Paul warned us about that there. "And we fight against strong ones." Now, if you were walking home one night and there appeared in front of you a gang of thugs, would you not find a more circuitous route that would lead you back home instead of trying to fight your way through that gang coming and going? Moreover, if you managed to fight your way past the gang initially, when you left to go someplace else, would you go back the same way, or would you try to find a route that did not include running the gauntlet through that gang again? Now, apparently, what we have in these two sections of Daniel 10 shows us something very important. Whoever the angel was that initially arrived to reveal the message of the vision, and most conservative commentators believe that it was Gabriel who is the angel mentioned here, we know that he was waylaid by the prince of Persia and was literally kept from continuing on his journey to reach Daniel. This tells us a couple of things that are extremely important. First of all, not all angels, fallen or unfallen, are equal in strength. Some are obviously more powerful than others. And secondly, there was a specific route that the angel had to take to reach Daniel because of Daniel's location in the physical world. When I was much younger, in my faith, I tended to think of the spiritual realm as merely being the sky above me. I assumed when angels needed to move from one part to the other, they simply sped invisibly through the open space, much like Superman would do in a cartoon. Superman does not necessarily follow a flight plan. He simply points himself in the direction he needs to go, and there he goes, as the crow flies. Birds do this all the time, of course. They might be perched on a branch of a tree, and then something catches their eye, so off they go in that new direction in a fairly straight path. Now, I assumed that angels did the same thing. When they needed to get from God's throne or some other portion of heaven to a place on earth, they simply took a direct path to get there. There's no fuss, no muss, just go straight to it. We all know that the quickest route from one point to the next is a straight line. But here in Daniel 10, there appears to be a problem. The angel had to go through a particular territory that was controlled in this case by a being the Bible refers to as the Prince of Persia. Now, Persia in those days is what Iran is today. Same geographical area. And it seems clear that this particular prince or spiritual demon had control of the comings and goings of other spiritual beings through that region. He protected it according to his desire and his wishes. Why did the angel that God sent need to travel through that location? Why not simply take another route to it? Maybe there was no other route. Maybe that was the gate that led from God's throne to the location of Daniel. Now, some might say that the angel could have simply been unexpectedly overtaken by the prince of Persia as the prince saw the angel attempting to traverse that particular dimension. He likely knew where God's angel was headed, and he set out to stop him. He was successful for 3 weeks until Michael arrived and fought against the prince of Persia. Now, allowing the original angel to continue on his way, thanks to Michael, and carry out his mission, bringing the answer from God's throne to the prophet Daniel. Maybe it was all accidental. We might be tempted to think that, except for the fact that this same angel, what he says in Daniel verse 20 of Daniel 10, in that verse, the angel makes it clear that he needs to go back the same way by which he came to see Daniel. He notes that he needed to go back to fight the prince of Persia again, but he also lets us know of another prince, the prince of Greece, who is, quote, about to come, unquote. I gain a few insightful bits of information from this brief dialogue between the angel and Daniel. First of all, there are powerful spiritual beings controlling areas of this world, and they are in place there by Satan's orders and under his authority. Secondly, there are specific portals or gates through which God's angels must pass to gain access to this world from God's throne. This is fascinating to me because it provides a glimpse into the entire area of interdimensional world that thrives all around us. Yet in the normal course of our daily life, we are absolutely powerless to see physically. The way in which angels come into and leave this physical realm is one thing. We really don't know much about that process, and we probably don't need to know. The Bible doesn't really tell us. More important is what these beings attempt to do once they gain access to this physical world. Of far more importance is the reality that these spiritual beings, the fallen ones, control a great deal of what goes on in this world, but they are rarely, if ever, seen. What we see instead are the individual human beings they have chosen to work in and through. And in fact, I believe many of these extremely powerful human beings that are controlled by these malevolent forces are never seen. They are so far in the background that it is very likely the world will never see their faces until such a time as the world becomes thoroughly one in government and purpose. And that's going to happen according to the Bible. Now, the people we see as being very powerful in our world are very likely little more than puppets themselves, fully deluded. The real human power brokers who have given themselves completely over to Satan and his purposes remain deeply in the shadows, at least for the time being, until such a time as it becomes safe enough for them to reveal themselves to the world. This makes Paul's words of Ephesians 6:12 that much more important. We do not fight against flesh and blood, but against the rulers in heavenly places who use certain human beings to get the job done. One can only guess as to what these people have been promised by these otherworldly beings, directly or indirectly. Chances are good that they are wealthy beyond measure. It would not surprise me to learn that some of these people who pull the strings, who are deep in the shadows, have more money than some small countries, and they use their wealth not only to insulate themselves from others, but to create a continual type of havoc and upheaval that we're experiencing and seeing throughout the world today. We're going to spend a bit of time learning about the ways the spiritual beings travel to and from their world to ours, at least according to the Bible. But the truth of the matter is that we must never lose sight of what God is doing and that he has absolute sovereignty over all of his creation. And that includes Satan and all of the fallen angels, all of them. If we focus on individual human beings, we will become entangled and enmeshed in something that is far bigger than we can imagine. Now, in doing so, we will become lost to the reality of what God is doing, because our focus will no longer be on God, but our focus then would turn to people. Satan wants us to focus our time and our attention on people, people like George Soros, people like Mr. Obama, or other politicians and powerful leaders of various nations throughout the world who seem to be working hard to overthrow this democratic nation, America. Now, that's not just happening here. It's happening throughout the world in many parts of Europe right now. It's happening in the Middle East. I believe when we start focusing on people, we cease to realize that the powers and principalities have engaged us. This is exactly what those powers want us to do, because they know that once we cease to focus our attention on the war that is occurring in the spiritual realm, it quickly becomes as though we are trying to stick our fingers in this hole or that one, attempting to plug the many breaches we know exist in the dam in our physical world. The focus needs to be on the actual war in the heavenlies that occurs on a daily basis, and we also need to focus on its purpose. It is there that the battles are fought, lost, or won. Ultimately, of course, God is victor, and he allows us graciously to share in that victory as we abide in him. That's John 15. As authentic Christians, we have an obligation to fight the good fight. And that does not mean standing up against human beings as if they are the enemy. Now, clearly, many people today are being used by these powers and principalities in the spiritual places, just as Judas Iscariot was, just as Antiochus Epiphanes was in 168 BC, just as the Antichrist will be. But in the end, these people, all of them, still need Jesus. They need salvation, and they must be given the opportunity to hear the gospel message. Sometimes that's done with words. However, it should always be done with the actions of our lives to back up our words. The spiritual powers and principalities that exist and war against the saints of God and his creation will never be saved. And I'm talking about those spiritual beings in the spiritual realm, they who are currently standing opposed to God and are in rebellion to him will never be saved. They know the gospel message. They realize its truth. They know the Bible is true. They know it is the word of God, but they will never have the opportunity to be forgiven or to receive the salvation from the Lord. It is a biblical impossibility because of the decision they made originally to rebel along with Satan. In their hatred toward God and his creation, they willingly use people to accomplish their goals for this planet. We see this throughout the world. And we stand back in horror, wondering how can human beings do such terrible things to one another? Humans are fully culpable for their atrocious acts. Yet it must be understood that behind those people and their heinous acts stand overlords, powers, principalities, and a legion of demonic hosts prompting the lost of this world to traffic in the very things that Satan provides in the hopes of destroying this world as we know it and overcoming God himself. Well, that's our introduction to Behind Enemy Lines. And we need to understand that as Christians, that's where we are. We are behind enemy lines. What does that mean? Well, tune in again next time. We'll continue the discussion. And until then, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you truly are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.